That's about what I expected out of that game, personally.
That's bright. Holy crap. Oh.
I think
Oh,
Lenny,
man.
I
My
think Rob
backlight
just
fell.
woke up on Dune or Arrakis, right?
My backlight fell down with a right in my face there. That was harsh.
Yeah.
Tech Hockey Guide presents the Chasing McNaughton Podcast, covering the Michigan Tech Huskies and the CCHA with your host, Tim Brown, Rob Gilreath, Dustin Lindstrom, and Matt Cavender.
Welcome to episode 48 of season 5 of the Chasing McNaughton Podcast, presented by Tech Hockey Guide and recorded from the state of hockey. I'm Tim Brown, your host, and I'm joined this week by Dustin Lindstrom.
Hey, everyone.
Rob Gilreath.
Hey, guys.
And Matt Cavender.
You already know who it is, and the Stonehill women are NCAA tournament bound, baby.
You're going to just keep derailing me and cause me to never introduce the guest now, aren't you, Matt?
Yeah.
Is that going to be a thing? All right.
I just want to see if you can. I want to see if you can remember to introduce the guest every time.
With the Mason Cup championship upon us in Bemidji, we reached out to Jared Ribeiro from the Bemidji Pioneer to discuss the CHA. Thanks for joining us again, Jared.
Yeah, thank you. I'm 1 week removed from a riveting Limp Bizkit conversation, which I'm a little bummed. I grew up a professional wrestling fan, so like,
oh man, this would have been
Limp
a great
Bizkit
episode.
Songs, like break stuff, roll. I could have really chimed in there. So
is this a third consecutive backwards hat week? Is that what we're looking at?
All right. So how many song titles did you find in Jack's preview?
So, the problem with that is like, I can't even call myself a Limp Bizkit fan.
Okay.
It's just whatever they put on like 1990s WWE pay-per-views. But I found a couple in there, but I know like five or six total Limp Bizkit songs. And look, no one's given them any Grammys for it, but like,
yeah,
you can have a good time.
No, it was a fun discussion last week, and we can thank Paul Durst again for that. Let's see. This week we'll talk about the Bemidji win, Michigan Tech finding the craziest way to survive, and then Jared has some questions about MTU Broomball, apparently, and I'm sure we'll talk about pairwise complications for the CCHA winner, or at least potential ones, depending on how things fall in the rest of the games this coming weekend. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I'm just hoping I stay awake. I got up at 4:30 for work today, so it's been a long day.
All right. We'll be right back with Jared Ribeiro after a little thank you notes and a brief note from our sponsor.
Fibke Dental is a general dentistry practice located in downtown Rhinelander, Wisconsin, home of the Hodag. Look online at FibkeDental.com or find them on Facebook. They do pain-free dentistry for kids, adults, people that went to great schools, and people that ended up at Northern Michigan. Stop in and say hi between 8 and 5 and tell them THG sent you. That is FIBKE dental.com.
We fund everything at Tech Hockey Guide from listeners like you. You can show your support by becoming a patron at patreon.com/techhockeyguide. Whether you're interested in question priority, access to patron-only Zoom chats with coaches and players, in-stat deep dives, extended versions of the podcast, unedited video or audio, early access, or commercial-free listening, there's a level for you. We also now have 15% discounts off annual memberships with tiers ranging from $2 to $50 per month. Again, sign up at patreon.com/techhockeyguide. All right, welcome back, Jared. I don't really know where we want to start. I think we kind of have to start with what we pre-talked about and just get right into your questions about Michigan Tech Broomball.
That is definitely the most on the nose, on topic discussion we could have right now.
We're just teasing all that other stuff for later to get everybody to stick around.
Who cares? Mason Cup final, like nobody.
Yeah,
nobody
we'll get there. But so
that's not till Friday. Yeah. Broomball is today.
Yeah,
that's true.
Well,
so
yeah, that's one game. Apparently, Broomball is for life.
Our listeners understand what Broomball means to the Michigan Tech community. This is like a whole deal. You don't understand the can of worms you've just opened.
Well, so but, like I grew up in the rink growing, like, you know, you youth hockey, right? And like it was every Thursday night, maybe like Wednesday night, it doesn't matter what night of the week it was, but like they bring out these like big nets and it'd just be these old dudes running around like whacking this broom ball around. And I was like, oh, that's kind of lame. Like, I don't know why anyone would want to do that. And like,
all right,
but then you guys start talking broom ball like it's some cherished thing in Houghton, and I
it is so
it is?
Yeah, so you're talking about
Minnesota broom ball, like, right?
You don't play the weird Minnesota broom ball. I don't know what that means.
I mean,
so
the
weird Minnesota broom ball is USA broom ball rules, all that jazz, right? You don't have an actual broom. You got a piece of plastic stuck on a stick. That's not broom ball. That's plastic stick ball.
No, yes. We always love the hardware store downtown and how every, you know,
they would literally
fall or
like,
late yes. fall, early winter has like a giant supply of brooms that we all buy, cut off a bunch of the straw.
Guys, we are passing by the critical fact that yes,
it is
kids
a broom.
Do indeed have to play with a corn bristle broom as per the rule book.
Yep.
And then you can alter that corn bristle broom in just about any way you want.
As long as the angle isn't too sharp.
Yeah, the angle isn't too sharp. You don't add anything supplementary to the duct tape.
Like chunks of ribeye or anything. Or rebar or anything
like
that. Like
the big thing people would do, like the one that would get busted the most often, was people would put like the plastic whiskey bottles in there. So it would just be an aerodynamic. Like,
oh, no, you gotta be slyer than that, Matt. We always brought all of our stuff down with a 5 gallon bucket. The 5 gallon bucket has a small amount of water in it. You dip, you go to broom check, you get your brooms all checked because you have to, the refs have to squeeze them and feel bristles. That's how you start the game off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you get your brooms checked, part of equipment check before the game. That is how
yes,
it starts.
Yes, because illegal equipment has been abused a lot of times.
Correct.
There is actually a rule that goalies have to wear like pants and they can't wear like dresses or skirts because there was a team that like went to Goodwill and got all the homecoming dresses and just had the guy stand across the net in like a homecoming dress. So there's
open
like,
his legs for a giant net.
Which is why I'm also kind of upset because there was a team for a while called Orange Glad and their uniform was wearing banana costumes, but the goalie couldn't wear one because then there was fabric between his legs. But I feel like that was a missed opportunity to put your goalie in a gorilla costume. I think that would have really topped it off. But
I gotta be honest, guys, it sounds like you were playing Quidditch, not broomball.
No, there's no golden snitch or whatever the hell it is.
No. They don't.
Okay,
there's,
so
if
instead
you're
of,
comparing
so instead
this
of,
to like American standardized broomball, this does
so
kind of
Michigan
sound
Tech
like
broomball
Quidditch,
versus
I understand.
The stuff you saw is played with a real broom on an outdoor rink, and instead of having like hockey nets that are off the boards, the net is built into the boards and the size of a sheet of plywood.
Oh,
so the
okay.
net is 4x8. And usually the goalie plays on their knees and kind of slides around. And the other big thing that's different from Minnesota or USA broomball is that we don't use the stupid suctiony shoes. You have to play with street shoes or boots. You can't wear the real broomball shoes.
Which also means, so it's a lot slipperier, right? So then depending on how the ice conditions are for the night, you get the checking rule is either one step, two step, or no step check. Because hitting is actually legal as well. In regular broomball, you can't check either. It's not, there's no actual checking somebody off the puck. But at Tech broomball, you could definitely floor people as if you take the appropriate amount of steps.
Okay, I
it's
don't.
It's way more violent than the standard U.S. version.
If you got a VCR, I can bring you some games I recorded of
and
my team in college.
My buddy has got some. Well, no, actually, I know Papsiak has gifts of when I was playing somewhere. Maybe I'll throw one in the chat. I had a couple cool goals for the Misfits team, but people would also like form their broom into different ways depending on like how they played. Like for me,
I was a scoop and chuck.
Me too.
Yeah. I was more hockey style because I was a hockey player and that was comfortable to me, but I definitely knew some scoop and chucks. I knew, if you guys remember Graham, he just had like, it was the weirdest thing, but it worked for the way that he played defense, the way that he would like lay and pray. But yeah, everyone had like a different style to doing it. And it was kind of fun.
One of the guys on one of my team's freshman year, it was the craziest thing ever that somehow adding alcohol to being on the ice made him not clumsy at all.
It sounds like PEDs.
Yeah. He was like, you know, usually you're slipping and sliding around, and somehow like his slipping and sliding was offset by the alcohol. So
we're just gonna have to get like the U.S. anti-doping agency involved in Michigan Tech broom ball now.
No, I think it's the opposite. I think he shouldn't be able to play unless he blows a .08.
All right, they gotta have like a six drink minimum. Okay,
I don't have any like allegiances to Minnesota broomball. I've never played broomball. It looks ridiculous.
It's fun. I play a similar style to it down here now that I'm in Wisconsin.
I would like to point out though that while you guys like, you know, we're talking about broomball, I thought it looked like Quidditch. Rob said, "Oh, what is that? Something like the golden you know what the golden snitch is if you're calling it the golden snitch." Like, you can't hide behind that. You know, we got curling up. You guys can have your custodian Quidditch. We got curling up here.
Michigan Tech went to the semifinals of the Collegiate Curling Championship this year.
Fair.
So represent that too.
Congrats. Congrats.
A Minnesota team in there. I think it was a couple of Wisconsin teams and a Michigan team.
Does Houghton do curling classes as a PE credit for high school?
I don't think high school, but the curling club in the Keweenaw is actually a really interesting one. It's in an old mining building, and it only has two sheets. And if it's snowing really bad outside, you got to deal with drifting coming in through the walls.
Yeah, I curled one time for Misfits for Winter Carnival, and the first thing we did was like we were against Mub Board, and for some, you know, for all the stupid things that Mub has for some reason, they had somebody that knew how to curl appropriately, and all of us were just like plebeians, and it was bad.
Yeah. Well, I'll make it a point to try out true Houghton broom ball at some point. I still have to try out some curling. It's like a rite of, it's like my Bemidji virginity is still there because I have
to here, so. I put a link in the chat for the picture, a website that's got some pictures of the Keweenaw Curling Club. It's actually a really unique place to curl. That's literally in an old mine building where they maintain the drills.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Right?
That is cool.
Yep, it's right next to Calumet High School.
Yeah, this is sweet.
And they put two sheets in there. It's all natural ice. It's that none of that's there's no refrigeration plant in there at all. So it, you know, it depends on the weather, right? But
they have a cool warming room that's like up top that's like actually heated, and then you get kind of a bird's eye view of the matches that are going on. Pretty neat to go even if you're not curling.
Yep, it's a really neat spot.
I'm sure this year was a little messed up as far as broomball goes, but we still have the.
It was, yeah. They had a cancellation and everything.
The webcams, right, Matt?
There are. If you want to watch a Michigan Tech broomball game during broomball, I believe they're done now, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they didn't have much of a season at all this year.
Yeah, but during the season, they do have webcams at which you can watch these shenanigans go down.
Live streams of like.
And I did have a PE credit in that while I was at Tech. It was literally just go play broomball for an hour every like Tuesday at 10 a.m. It was the best PE ever.
When did they create that?
I have no idea. It was my senior year. And you had to be still, like on top of it to get into that because it was.
Yeah, well, you had to be like
well requested.
Up. Yes, it was a lot. And I think that was one that the varsity athletes could take if they wanted, right?
Yeah, possibly.
But. Yeah, I wasn't able to get into that. I wasn't lucky enough to do that. But my favorite Tech gym credit was definitely paintball. That was a good one.
Do you guys know that I'm still not allowed to play in my next broomball season?
You're still Michigan suspended?
As far as I know.
What did you do?
In my last game ever, I got speared in the nuts. So I slashed the guy across the head as hard as I could.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Helmets are required, by the way.
Well, what's the
helmets
point
with
that?
A cage? With a cage.
Yeah, you have to be.
Or a bubble, but the bubble is not always a great idea when we get to like negatives.
Mm-hmm.
What's the fun in wearing a helmet? I mean, if you're allowed to drink, I mean,
I don't think you were probably weren't allowed to drink, but I mean, we had said anything.
We had public safety called to one of our events to kick a fan out. So,
I know when I added the sink at rink, I had. To design like the goals were designed in a way so that you could like slide a stretcher from the far end of one goal to the other goal without having to carry it out of the rink.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I added the sink it rink in my like
they are still built in such a way where they're accessible from behind each net.
Yeah. Just in case something stupid happens. All right. Well, that's enough about a topic that most of you probably didn't. I'm sure you enjoyed it because, you know, you guys are
We've all got our Broomball memories, but yeah.
Anyway, so let's start with Bemidji. I didn't get a chance to watch a ton of that game, and it didn't seem like it was worth it because it didn't seem like it was all that close. What was the semifinal game like in Bemidji, Jared?
It was a little bit of a bizarre game in the sense of a lot of what happened in the first period wasn't what kind of has been the norm for Bemidji State. They've really struggled in a lot of first periods, especially earlier in the year. You go back to that Tech series in Bemidji, where I think it was, what, 3-0 after the first and on night one. Obviously, Tech had that 4-0 lead that started in the first period on night two. They couldn't put a first period together in the first half of the season. They kind of grew out of that a little bit towards the middle of the year, but even down the stretch, you know, starting that Ferris State series, first periods weren't always guaranteed for Bemidji. They went down 1-0 to Ferris in the Make-A-Wish game, and everyone got a little tense holding their wrapped stuffed animals that they wanted to throw on the ice. And Mankato series, they didn't score in a single first period. They outscored them 8-0 and didn't get a first period goal. Ferris State, Friday night in the quarterfinals, they go down 2-0 in the first 10 minutes. They didn't score in the first period the second night against Ferris State. So, you know, I think the general vibe I got was, okay, they want to start good, but maybe a good start for them is getting out of the first period just with some momentum and going into that second, because Bemidji State has been very good in second periods. They've had three games before the playoffs where they had outshot opponents something like 20-5 in second periods because they just bury you in your own zone. But they get that goal from Polkamp right away, and they held Lake State to 4 shots in the first 30 minutes. That was a little surprising. But Ethan Langenegger played really well. And I've been banging the Ethan Langenegger drum all year, saying he's one of the more underrated players in the conference. So they got a goal back down, you know, Bemidji State scores 2:58. Lake State gets a goal back with about 7 minutes left in the second period. And they took control of that game until the third, to the point where Sarah Torrey even said, all we wanted to do was just get to the third period up 3-1. And that was a little, you know, I didn't expect him to be that candid, but he was. And the first half of the third period was a little bizarre, where you kind of just expected Bemidji to play that dump and chase game, finish every check, nobody gets in the box. And they kind of caved into a little bit of Lake State wants to do, and that's that end-to-end rush game. And Matias Scholl made an unbelievable save on a 2-on-1 to stop Jared Westcott. And once that save happened, they got to the media timeout, and Bemidji kind of coasted from there, going back to that defensive-minded game that they kind of leaned on and have leaned on in this big run they went on since January. And so it was a little bit closer than I think maybe the shots on goal depicted just at times, but you never really got a sense that Bemidji State was in jeopardy of losing that game. And I think a little bit of that comes from the fact that Lake State made 2 bus trips to Minnesota in the span of 5 days and had to play back-to-back-to-back games against St. Thomas. So, it was a fun night at the Sanford Center. Attendance was fantastic. I'm sure it'll be sold out this weekend, knowing it, that Tech's going to bring a ton of fans to that game. And, we get the 2 best teams in the league going head to head against each other. And while it happened in a little bit of a weird way, it'll be really exciting on Friday.
Yeah. The only thing about that is the Friday start. We've seen a decent amount of, I guess, complaints about that in our Discord from our diehard fans that aren't as close to Bemidji as I am, and
Friday?
I don't know if I'm going yet, but
gotcha.
But yeah, I'm taking Friday off if that happens. And the only nice thing about it versus being in Houghton is if it's being that it's in Bemidji instead of Houghton, I don't have to like leave as soon as I drop my daughter off at school. I can like get ready and then go, instead of like immediately having to leave to make it in time for puck drop. Especially with the time change and all that. But that's worth discussing for sure. I know it'll be it should be pretty full. I know Section X is all reserved for Michigan Tech, and I fully expect it to be packed with Tech fans. It sounds like those tickets go on sale to Michigan Tech fans through Michigan Tech tomorrow. which you guys will hear this well after that, but most of you anyway. So, and it sounds like the Misfits slash Pep Band are getting two buses. So there'll be like 106 of them that are going on the trip. I just talked to, why am I blanking on his name? Who's the president?
Kellen?
What's
Kellen.
That?
Kellen.
Kellen. Yep. Kellen just said that we don't need to do fundraising for this week because he just got $3,000 from the Hall Association, I guess. So that should help cover things for getting the Misfits there this weekend. And it's a little easier because it's one of the shorter possible trips that Michigan Tech could have drawn to not be at home, period, in the whole conference. And it's a day trip, so that makes it a little easier where you're, I assume they're not planning on staying if they're getting buses regardless. So it's nice to see Michigan Tech helping at least procure the buses and I assume pay for some of it, but then trying to get the funds from other places and then put a little bit on the Misfits, like 10, 20 bucks, I think is the goal. So I'm excited for the game. And it should be full and loud. But yeah, you're right, Jared, about the game itself, the semifinal, like looking at the box score, it doesn't look as tenuous as you said there was in the moments in the middle of the second, was it? Or towards the end of the second? Yeah. Because it's not like there's a ton of block shots. It just must have been that they didn't actually result in shots on goal with some of their success or the time they controlled it, whatever. So, but yeah, you're right. Like that was one of the reasons that I didn't really care who won the Lake State St. Thomas game. I was just glad it went to three games because if St. Thomas managed to win, I wasn't that upset about being able to watch Tech play at St. Thomas with St. Thomas having to play the extra game. And, or if Lake State managed to win, getting to host Minnesota State, and that worked out in a very interesting way, for sure. But, yeah. Anything else you guys want to say about Bemidji Lake State?
I mean, I was hoping for some dramatic end-of-game Lake State shenanigans, but we just got the empty netter from Bemidji instead. But, you know, I'd much rather be going back to Houghton for a third weekend, but it should be a good game up in Bemidji, too, and they seem to be well-deserved to get in there as well. So
yeah. I kind of felt like Bemidji just kind of took care of business and, like Jared said, they were ready to just go into a third period and just kind of get it over with. So, you know, about as quiet as the Lakers could have gone out, which is a little unfortunate. They had a season that was a lot better than a lot of people expected. But, you know, that's about what I expected out of that game, personally.
Oh, that's bright. Holy crap.
I think,
man.
I think Rob just woke up on Dune or Arrakis, right?
my backlight fell down. It was right in my face there. That was harsh.
Yeah. Love our audio medium with video issues, right?
Yeah. Just a good, clean game by Bemidji. They went out, like Matt said, took care of business exactly like they needed to. There was nothing terribly exciting about it. It was just... Lake State was at the end of their run, and Bemidji is still going, right? So
before we talk about the other game, Jared, how were the refs in your game?
They were perfect. No complaints. Not a single controversial call other than like three or four missed offsides and icings. But you know, that comes with every game. Kind of a little bit about Lake State, too. I got a chance to chat with Damon Witten after the game. I think the writing was on the wall for them, and that's kind of the sense I got from them after the game. They knew what they were going up against. It's not only that Bemidji's like a tough team to play against, you know, no matter what kind of team they put on the ice, just with the structure they play with, that defense first physical structure. I mean, it's a team that, you know, it's a tough team to blow out. You know, if it happens because Bemidji State usually does something wrong, but just with the structure they play at, you're used to those low scoring punishing games where they're going to dump the puck in on you 100 times and, you know, make you beat them another way. And then when you add in the fact that they haven't lost since January 19th, it's you add that momentum to it. It's just a tough team to go up against when you're a Lake State team that doesn't really match up well with them in that kind of skill or talent department. So I think, one thing Witten said was they lacked a little bit of jump from their top guys. And that was very evident, for most of the game. Milburn, Westcott, Harrison Roy, I mean, they just seemed a step slower than you would have wanted them to be as a Lake State fan, for a game of that magnitude. And I think a lot of that does come from playing three games, the weekend before and making those bus trips. It's a brutal, brutal bus trip from Sault Ste. Marie to Bemidji. And, it's tough to get settled in, especially for a one game series. Maybe they have a little bit more jump if it's a best of three and they can get it to a third game. But you're asking Ethan Langenegger to make a lot of saves that he, doesn't necessarily or shouldn't have to make in that scenario. So, Lake State needed a better start than they got, and they did everything they could to get back into that game. But it was the writing was kind of on the wall before it started.
Yeah. Speaking of Langenegger, he's already in the transfer portal.
Yeah. Cause they don't have any grad programs at Lake State.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see if Lake State could recruit or maintain more talent than they do if they did have grad programs. It does seem to hurt them a good bit.
I think it's just an opportunity for somebody after 4 years to go somewhere else and work on whatever, right? I mean, I don't think you can read too much into it from
No, it's not an indictment of Lake State.
No, not at all. But I'm saying, like, imagine if like Tech didn't have grad programs and Blake couldn't play this year.
Yeah, that'd be no good.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fun.
Well, like I said in a chat somewhere, was that in our Discord or in the Slack? I don't know. I think it was in Discord. There's nothing that says Blake can't work on a business degree after getting his engineering degree. He can keep playing and just have a different degree. Like, he doesn't have to go to grad school to keep playing. The only reason the grad school was a big piece of this up until very recently was because the only way to transfer without having to sit out a year was to go somewhere that didn't have a grad program that your existing team did, or the other way around. Like, you're going somewhere because that school didn't have this grad program like Russell Wilson did back in the day to go to Wisconsin. Like, you're literally finding the program that doesn't exist at the school you're currently at so you can use that rule to transfer and still play right away. That's gone now, so you can literally transfer and just go get any degree you want, whether it's a master's or another bachelor's degree. So that's not necessarily the issue anymore, but it was when all of this started. So
do you work in manufacturing, product design, or product development? Is your business trying to improve efficiency while also producing at scale? Livonia Technical Services can help. They provide world-class quality improvement training and consulting for failure modes and effect analysis, product development, and cost reduction. All things that could help Northern Michigan assemble a competent defense. If you think your business could use a prevention mindset and reduce manufacturing costs, a partnership with Livonia Technical Services might be right for you. Check them out at livoniatech.net. That's LIVONIA tech.net.
Are you in the market for insurance? Have your rates for home, auto, boat, or more been increasing way beyond inflation? If so, maybe it's time you spoke with Aaron Pietola and the team at Arcadia Insurance Group, serving Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and more. Who better to serve you than a former Michigan Tech player? For more information, call 866-511-1069 or go to arcadiaagency.com. And I guess that kind of plays into the last thing we wanted to talk about, right, Dustin?
Sure. Let's talk pairwise.
Yeah. So the CCHA could end up in a very interesting situation where they could be there's only like one team, I think, alive that can win a conference tournament and be ranked below Michigan Tech or Bemidji. And I think that was St. Lawrence.
Correct.
So more than likely the winner is going to be the 16. Which means they should play BC, but because of how the one band might play out and because of the hosts applied that might fall in the four band, that might not happen. So we Michigan Tech might luck into, I say luck in the perspective of like, it won't be a 19-hour bus ride to Providence or something crazy for the Misfits, more so than like any of those Big Four teams are going to be difficult to beat. But if the bands fall a certain way, there's a very good chance that the ones are BU, BC, North Dakota, and Denver. That is the most likely outcome, I think, of the ones, with Michigan State being in play to be that four over one of the NCHC teams, depending on how, if Michigan State can win its tournament. And if, I think if Denver wins its tournament, Michigan State cannot become a top, get in that one band. But if Denver loses to either North Dakota or in their semifinal, they could fall if Michigan State wins. And there's even a couple chances, I think, for Quinnipiac to get up there. And there's one other team, I forget who.
Maine can get there. Yeah.
So if the two NCHC teams make it in the one band and two NCHC teams fall into the four band, Michigan Tech and the winner of Atlantic Hockey more than likely have to play the two NCHC teams. So we could end up in St. Louis or Sioux Falls playing North Dakota or Denver simply because of how goofy the pairwise is. I don't know what they would do if the NCHC has, I believe it's the rule is five teams, then they don't have to do that. But I don't know if they would actually break that rule. I don't know if they would break that rule for... I don't know what they would do if they didn't, like, they don't, like, as much as it's frustrating to be like the 15-16 team, like to not have the one and two play the obvious 15-16 teams, I'm not sure they'll break that rule to just because there's five NCHC teams, for example, because they can make it work. I don't know what they'll do. And obviously we have a whole weekend of games to figure that out. The one nice thing about the Friday game is if Michigan Tech does manage to win, that means I have one extra day to fundraise to pay for a bus to wherever the hell Misfits need to go, which will be helpful for sure. So if you're listening to this and want to send a Misfit to the regional, if that were to happen, start thinking about donating about $260. I guess we should add 20% inflation to that, because that's what happens to everything, right? In this day and age. So I don't know what it'll actually cost to get one Misfit. And it obviously will depend a ton on if they're going to Sioux Falls, St. Louis, or somewhere out east. But pairwise is going to be very interesting this year, and how it plays out with the bands and then having like the UMass and Omaha in play as hosts. I don't know if either of them can actually fall to the four band, which would make it way more complicated for the committee to figure things out. Because the last thing you want is like North Dakota to have to play UMass in Massachusetts and like BC or BU to have to play Omaha in Sioux Falls, right? Like that is not something the committee wants to do, is have to send the East Coast teams to the West, the top seed East Coast team to the West, and vice versa. Like they would hate that, and they would probably do everything they can to not make that happen. And I think that's what you were talking about, Dustin, was where they might budge the pairwise a little to move like the 13 team to 12 to like solve that problem.
You could, in theory. I don't think they would do it.
Like, yeah.
There's they no precedent, right? For changing teams from band to band.
Yeah. It depends on how close the comparison is of those two teams and what rationale they can come up with for, because they did have that one time where they changed, was it Denver and CC that they flip-flopped one year because of how many head-to-head games they had, if I remember correctly. But that's such a rare thing that even though the quote-unquote pairwise comparison had them different, whatever. I don't know. What are your thoughts on all of that stuff, Jared?
If Bemidji State makes the tournament and they would somehow end up in Sioux Falls, that's basically a paid vacation for me because I went to college in Sioux Falls. So I'd love to go see all my friends down there again and cover some hockey. Other than that, I don't really care where it's at. I don't really care who they play. The Beavers would have to play a really tough team, but You know, I'd prefer to just cover more hockey if I can, and that only happens if Bemidji State keeps winning. So, you know, plug your ears, Tech fans. I would prefer State to win, but and if
Shocker
I still,
there's the news of the podcast.
if somehow they luck into playing in Sioux Falls, then I need to go buy a lottery ticket.
Do you get a paid trip wherever? Like, are you going to get to go watch them no matter where they are? For the paper?
Sounds like it. Yeah, okay. We got some nice logistics to work out, and you know where all that stuff comes from. But yeah, the readership right now is doing pretty well, so it would be a nice little boost.
Yeah, that'll be interesting for sure.
What do you guys think of like the Schlossman Wodan stuff of like doing the whole debate of, you know, home team hosts the regionals?
Well, I think Wodan made his own point this week about how frustrating it would be, like how awesome it would be, but also how like his point was like the CCA or the Big Ten championship this weekend deserves to be in a bigger arena. But like, I don't know. Somebody else can talk for a while. I don't know my opinion on this.
What I would say is that there's some very clear positives to it. You know, of course, it's going to be a more attended game. If you're staying at the number one seed, you're going to at least have one game that feels like it should. But the other side of that is I feel like there are a lot of institutions that simply could not support that. Like, as much as I love Ferris, like, imagine a world in which Ferris is like a team that's hosting and suddenly they've got to host three other teams in Big Rapids.
Well,
don't believe they have the hotels for that.
Then let's pick one that's a little more realistic. Let's pick one a little more realistic. Can you imagine Western Michigan hosting a regional like that?
Not really.
Hosting a regional? Like,
even then, that is a little more realistic. But yeah, Lawson, I don't feel like is equipped to handle.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's equipped to handle something like that. I mean, more people would show up. The Western game would be nuts. But
the I don't know. The part that I liked in Schlossman's, I mean, I don't know if he had this in his column where it was his official pitch for it, but so maybe someone else brought it up. I should have probably fact checked this before I went on the tangent, but I liked the idea of whoever is the highest seed period host that game. So the 2 seed would host the 3 seed for that weekend. That gap weekend that usually takes place during the basketball Final Four then just becomes the regional championship for the highest seed remaining in each regional. If they do that, doing one game series for each one feels cheap in a lot of ways. And
that puts a lot on us fans that want to go to all these games that you're talking 100%. About. If your team makes the Frozen Four, you're talking about potentially 3 flights across country to go see your team play. Like that's a lot of a burden to place on fans. And I don't know. Like, I think the thing that Dustin and I have kind of proposed is trying to come up with a system that allows like a group of teams to put in a bid, and the highest pairwise team of that group would be guaranteed a home game so it makes it more likely that the host would be not the 13th highest team, you know, like. If you had like Michigan Tech, Western Michigan, Michigan State hosting at Van Andel, you're guaranteeing the fans of that area that if one of those 3 teams makes it, you get a Michigan team in that regional. But you're not going to guarantee that Michigan State as the 16 gets to host. You're going to have Michigan State this year as a 1 or 2 seed hosting there. And I think that makes some sense of trying to like group, let these teams group together, share the burden of this, and make it more likely that the fans of that area will get a team they want.
I haven't heard that before. I love that idea. And those groups of teams can be, they don't have to be like separated by like 4 teams. You could group those teams by 10 apiece, mm-hmm. you know.
Yep.
North, like for Minnesota's sake, right? Like Gophers, Minnesota State, St. Cloud, Bemidji, North Dakota, Duluth.
Yeah, they could all host. They could host a regional at the X almost every Wisconsin. Year and guarantee that the highest rated Minnesota team is there. Right. And that will make Minnesota fans excited about that regional. And as soon as you get close to the, like, you're talking about right now, you would kind of know which team that is.
North Dakota.
And be able, if North Dakota was part of that group, you would know right. that North Dakota is going to be there. And the North Dakota fans would be buying tickets right now, knowing full well that they're guaranteed to be there before it even happens. And they're making those plans and all that stuff. I think that kind of solves the two problems of the regionals don't get the attendance they want because, like, fans are don't know where they're going till a week before to, like, some extent. And then the fans locally struggle to get interested in a regional when the host doesn't make it. So you can kind of, like, solve the two problems of allowing it to stay, quote unquote, neutral, because it's not going to be a campus stadium. But then you still get that local flair guaranteed as long as they all don't suck this year.
Yeah, I agree. I like that idea a lot. And it kind of is like the best of both worlds where you're almost guaranteeing that you're going to get a better turnout in terms of fans. It's a little bit more local, but then you don't have to utilize that gap weekend in the middle of it. And you don't have to do maybe a 3-game series instead of a best of one. It doesn't tax the fans in terms of travel and their wallets and everything. Like, that to me seems like the most, you know, common sense scenario in all this. And I think there's like, I see this training.
That, that means you'll never, they'll never right. pick it then. It's,
right. There's like, I'm still relatively new to covering college. I've watched college hockey my whole life, but I get the sense that, like, in college hockey, there's like, if there's an idea that's not working, they're going to try 10 times to ensure that it doesn't work before. So we're still probably like 5 years off of this from actually.
Well, and to be fair to the committee, one of the biggest concerns we've had as Western fans is, and I know they're not called this anymore, but the sheer stupidity of counting Allentown as a Midwest regional and giving three East Coast regionals. Like, it's been a huge burden on Western fans the last 6 years or however long it's been. And that's one thing that's really nice about this next few years is there's actually two regionals that are truly Western locations. Now, I'm not thrilled about the regional hosted by Lindenwood, because that building really isn't big enough to host a regional. Like, I don't understand how they won, because I thought that arena did not meet the minimum requirements of physical size. Like, they do not have enough seats. I thought the minimum was about 5,000, and they have, like, they don't even have 3,000, I don't think. It's it's a beautiful rink, and it's a nice location to get to go to for regional time. Like, I wouldn't mind having to make a trip to St. Louis to watch my team play and visit one of my college buddies and all that stuff. But, like, even if Michigan Tech makes it, like, I'm not sure. Well, if Michigan Tech makes it, I should be fine, because I should get tickets from Michigan Tech. But, like, there aren't that many tickets left if each team gets 500. Like, there's, like, 500 seats left total. Like, there's yeah. nothing left for anybody who doesn't get something from a team. Correct. So, yeah.
Also, Chris Bergeron just got fired from Miami, Ohio. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Oh, no, really?
Breaking news.
Breaking news on Friday morning when you finally hear this. Yeah, so by the time this podcast drops, he'll be back at Bowling Green, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that was kind of the joke we made last week, that just wait till he gets fired and he can come back to Bowling Green and start pick up where he left off. Mm. I mean, with that, I mean, that feels
that's not surprising news.
I feel like that was like the least well-kept secret that was going to happen. He had 1 year left on his contract. Yeah, so that's not surprising. Anything else you guys want to talk about? We good?
No, I think that covers it pretty well.
I think so.
Yeah, so, I guess the one other thing we can talk about relating to the Friday game is the CCHA recently announced the announcers for the game, and I think that's part of the reason they moved it to Friday, was to be able to get Pat Micheletti and Ben Holden, who usually cover our more Big Ten guys, right? So I think that's pretty cool to turn this more into a event. And so, like, nothing against the Bemidji announcers or Dirk either, but like it turns it into more of a thing that it's not just being broadcast by like the local announcers that usually do the home games for these teams. So I think that's kind of a cool change this year, and hopefully I won't be watching any of that because I'll be there in person, but I don't quite know yet. So I thought that was kind of cool. I know there were some questions about why the game's on Friday, and a lot of people who aren't in the CHA didn't even realize that until like today. But at the same time, I don't think most of us realized it until the playoffs started and Dirk talked about it the Monday before playoffs, right? I didn't realize it. So, all right, should we wrap it up?
Let's do it.
1 minute remaining in the podcast.
Well, that should do it for this episode of the Chasing McNaughton podcast. Please check out our Patreon and join by visiting patreon.com/tech hockey guide. Patrons at the white level or above receive question priority. Patrons at the black level or above receive access to extra podcast content, including extended versions of every podcast. We've got about 5 levels, and one of the biggest differences is each level you get access to the podcast sooner. So the highest level gets the raw audio of this file about as soon as I get done processing it and get it up on the site on Monday nights, typically. Those of you that pay for the gold level get the YouTube video, which is also typically unedited, on Tuesday mornings. And then now I usually drop the black version, which is like the extended podcast but edited, as soon as I'm done editing on Tuesday night, and then because the first half of the public podcast drops Wednesday morning. I think this week we're probably going to drop them Wednesday, Thursday, so you've got a little time to listen before the game on Friday as we lead into that. So, yeah, if you've, let's see, follow us on Twitter at ChasingMacPod or at Tech Hockey Guide. You can submit questions through Twitter, Facebook, and our Patreon page. If I remember to ask you guys for questions, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find the podcast on your site of choice, please let us know and we'll make it happen. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Fibke Dental in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, Arcadia Insurance servicing the Midwest, and Livonia Technical Services. Finally, thanks to the thank you notes for all the bumpers in this week's episode. If you like what you hear, check them out at thethankyounotes.bandcamp.com.
You've been listening to the Chasing McNaughton podcast, presented by Tech Hockey Guide, covering the Michigan Tech Huskies and the CCHA.